AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're on the Thursday edition FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Coming up on the show today, second half of the show at least, we are going to be talking with Jen McEwen running in a Senate District 7. That includes Duluth and some surrounding areas. That was a very contentious primary, if we go back to August, as McEwen was able to knock off a longtime DFL state senator. So we'll be speaking with her in the second half of the show, not only about northeastern Minnesota politics, but also about the presidential race, since McEwen is a surrogate for the Biden-Harris campaign as well. So that'll be in the second half. But before we get to all of that, man, I got a lot of news to get to today, as well as a theory I have on why Donald Trump will not be able to steal the election. Got Patrick Lilia on the other side of the production glass. Patrick, anything new with you today? You all right after the Twins lost yesterday yet again?
I kind of accepted it. I was really, really upset after Tuesday. But yesterday was just kind of the same game as Tuesday, and I'm like, oh, this is how it is.
Thankfully, I was not in the studio during the eighth inning of that game when Byron Buxton got picked off at first base. There were so many dumb decisions that were made in that entire series by Rocco Baldelli. I mean, I like Rocco Baldelli, but he got outmanaged by Dusty Baker. Just think about that for a second. Now, I know we're going into sports for just a second here, but the trope about Dusty Baker is that he's always been a terrible postseason manager, and right now he's the manager for the Astros, and he did a better job than Rocco Baldelli. Unbelievable.
I mean, all I'm going to say is I felt like the lineup that we put out there yesterday were not the nine best people.
Every team has injuries, though. That's not an excuse. I don't want to hear, well, Buxton and Donaldson were hurt. Every team has injuries
well,
right
no.
now.
I mean, even with the roster that we had minus those two guys, it's not about the injuries. It's what he had available, I felt, was not the best lineup that could have been put out there that day yesterday. We had a guy making his major league debut.
He turned out to be one of their best players yesterday,
yeah,
sadly.
Yeah, I suppose.
No, but I get your point there. That shows a lot of desperation. If you're playing a rookie in his first ever game, he's starting and batting sixth. Yeah, that is a solid point, even though Alex Kirilloff did end up playing pretty well for the Twins in that playoff game. But nonetheless, the Twins are out. They have lost 18 straight playoff games. And perhaps the most shocking statistic, the Twins have not scored more than four runs in a playoff game since October 9th of 2004. Don't want to hear about their pitching. It's been their hitting that's been the problem in the playoffs. But you know what, Patrick? I know how we can solve all the Twins' problems. Let's build them a new stadium. Because that solves everything with sports. When your team is losing, build them a new stadium. That was the argument we heard for building Target Field back in 2010. And Twins really haven't been that good since they built Target Field. They made playoff appearances in, what, 2010? Last year and this year, but majority of the seasons, they've been pretty lousy. They made that same argument about the Vikings, too. We need to build them a new stadium so the team can be competitive. And look at how that's turned out for the Minnesota Vikings. But hey, at least we got the 2017 Super Bowl and made a whole bunch of money. Oh, wait, we really didn't make any money as the state of Minnesota due to the Super Bowl. All right, that's all the more sports I'm talking right now. I had to get that off my chest, though. I just 18 straight playoff losses, and like I said, I was glad I was not hosting the show during the eighth inning. I'm not sure if Sasha or Matt could hear me in there during the eighth inning, but I about, like, threw my phone when Byron Buxton got picked off. I'm like, you're the fastest guy in Major League Baseball, and you're getting picked off. Yeah, that is a microcosm of the Twins season. All right, let's talk some politics now, though. So the other day, I had kind of an epiphany as I was thinking about this idea of Donald Trump trying to steal the presidential election. It's something that a lot of Democrats are freaking out about. By the way, Democrats are very good about freaking out about issues. I think a good way to put it, I heard this on a podcast once, the Democrats are the party of bedwetters while the Republicans are just the party of stupid people. That's not my quote. I heard that on a podcast and found that kind of fitting. But can Donald Trump really steal the election? I've actually changed my mind. I was kind of thinking for a while, all right, well, I suppose he could if they have the right alignment of power. And of course, he's certainly brazen enough. But ultimately, I don't think it will happen. I don't think the Republicans will go along with him stealing the election. And it's not because all of a sudden Republicans are going to become honorable and see the light and know that it will cause great harm to our democracy if we have a stolen election. No, it has nothing to do with that as to why I don't think Republicans will go along with stealing the election. It has everything to do with judicial appointments. And that, of course, is the issue that is ultimately very, very important to conservatives and Republicans. So let's think about this way. Let's set the scenario for November 3rd of 2020. Let's say Joe Biden wins the election, but Donald Trump wants to steal it. Under this scenario, if Joe Biden has legitimately won the election, I hate using that word legitimately. Now I'm kind of using that Trump language right there. If he legitimately wins, all right, nonetheless. Let's say Joe Biden wins the election, but Donald Trump wants to steal it. Well, under this scenario, in all likelihood, if Joe Biden has won, that also means Democrats have probably taken a majority in the U.S. Senate. And that is the key point right there. Because while you can mess with the presidential election and kind of overturn the results through some different parliamentary quirks and messing with the Electoral College, it is much more difficult to mess with the results of a congressional election. Because simply, there is no Electoral College when it comes to Congress and the Senate. It's pretty much whoever gets the most number of votes ends up being your representative or your senator. And then there's this too. Let's say Democrats take a majority in the Senate, but Donald Trump is still trying to steal the election. Well, constitutionally, Trump wouldn't be able to do that if Dems had the Senate because they would need the consent of the new Senate, which would be sworn in on January 3rd, I believe, to like certify the Electoral College results. And obviously, a majority of Senate Democrats would not go along with that. But there's a more important reason why I don't think this would occur either. And that's because, again, Republicans would be in the minority. They would have lost both houses of Congress. They would have lost both the Senate and the House. Well, they've already lost the House, and it's very unlikely they'll get it back. But again, if Biden wins the election, it's very, very likely Democrats take the majority in the Senate as well. Now, keep in mind, Mitch McConnell is the current Republican leader in the Senate. And the only thing he cares about, this is his number one issue. He'll even frankly admit it. There's one issue he cares about and one issue only, and that is judicial appointments. That's the only reason he's going along with Donald Trump during this administration, is that Trump has been able to appoint a whole bunch of conservative judges, not only to the Supreme Court, but the district courts and the appellate courts. In fact, I think he's appointed more judges during his first term than any other president in history. And that's the only thing Mitch McConnell cares about. McConnell doesn't care about MAGA and making America great and placating Trump supporters and so on and so on. He only cares about those judicial appointments. So again, let's say Democrats take a majority in the U.S. Senate. Mitch McConnell doesn't have any more power in terms of court appointments. Even if you have Donald Trump successfully steal the election from Joe Biden, you would still very likely have a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate. That would essentially make Donald Trump a lame duck president. He would have no power even if he stole the election if you still have two Democratic houses of Congress. Because not only would Donald Trump have his legislative agenda blocked, he would also be blocked from making cabinet appointments, and more importantly, he would largely be blocked from making judicial appointments. And that's what counts, and that's the only thing Mitch McConnell and lots of other Republicans care about. So think about it from that pragmatic perspective. What motivation would Mitch McConnell or other Republicans have to go along with Donald Trump to steal the election if they know they're already going to be the minority in Congress? Why would Mitch McConnell and other Republicans spend a whole bunch of their political capital to prop up what would largely be a lame duck president? I don't see that happening whatsoever. And then there's this as well. So let's say Republicans do go along with Donald Trump to steal the election. It's very likely they would not be getting either House of Congress back till probably 2026, Because think about that scenario. You have Trump steal the election. Well, that means Democrats probably are going to make more gains in Congress in 2022, since traditionally the president's party does even worse during their second term midterm election. Go back and look at Clinton, Obama, Bush, Reagan, everyone. Every president always has their party do terribly during their second midterm election, and Trump would be no exception. So Republicans would fall further into the minority in 2022. 2024, very likely you would have probably a Democratic president, since it's very unusual to have a political party control the White House for more than 8 years. That means the earliest Republicans could win Congress back would be 2026, and that could even possibly be pushing it. So, do you think Mitch McConnell would really condemn himself to being the minority party in the Senate until 2026 or beyond just to prop up a lame duck Donald Trump presidency when, oh, by the way, they wouldn't be able to make any judicial appointments anyways because Democrats would have a majority in the Senate? I think not. Republicans would have a much quicker path towards getting majorities in Congress under a Biden administration. As I talked about, traditionally, the president's party always does terribly in midterm elections. And I'm guessing the same thing would occur under a Biden administration, where if Joe Biden ends up becoming president, Republicans are probably going to make major gains in Congress in 2022. And that would be a much quicker path to retaking the majority for Republicans by having a Joe Biden in the White House instead of a lame duck Donald Trump. And that's what I think it comes down to, is that idea of pragmatism. Mitch McConnell knows this as well, and I ultimately don't think he's going to condemn himself to being the minority party for at least 6 years just to prop up a lame duck president and, like I said, not have any power to make judicial appointments. The only way I could see Republicans possibly going along with Donald Trump to steal the election would be somehow if Joe Biden won the presidential election, but Republicans maintained control of the Senate. That's not an impossible scenario, but it's very, very unlikely. The most likely scenario is that whoever wins the presidential election will have a majority in the Senate. So ultimately, yeah, Republicans probably not going to go along with Donald Trump stealing the election, but it's not because they're honorable or they've seen the light. It has everything to do with being pragmatic and getting their majorities back and making sure that they can make judicial appointments. Because again, if Republicans lose the Senate, they no longer have the ability to confirm judicial appointments of Donald Trump. That means no more appellate court judges, no more district court judges, and most importantly, no more Supreme Court judges. So that's at least kind of my take on why I don't think Republicans will ultimately go along with Trump stealing the election this fall should he lose. The only unlikely scenario where that could happen would again be if Joe Biden won the election but Republicans maintain the majority, but that is not very likely to happen. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I want to stay on national politics for a few more minutes here because I had another epiphany last night as I was listening to the broadcast, which of course you can hear every weeknight from 7 until 8 p.m. I caught part of the conversation as I was driving around and running some errands. I had the broadcast on in my car, and I can't remember who Brad was interviewing. I think it might have been Heather Digby Parsons with, I'm going to blank on which news organization she's with. But I liked a point that she brought up because Brad was asking her about, well, what did you make about Joe Biden in the presidential debate on Tuesday not answering the question as to whether he would expand the Supreme Court or get rid of the filibuster? If you remember back to the debate, Joe Biden refused to answer that question. Now, for a lot of Democrats, that probably made them uncomfortable. Well, why is Joe wavering on this issue? Why isn't he committing to anything? That's a fair criticism, but Heather Digby Parsons on the broadcast, I thought, brought up a good point, which I agree with. She said that we should actually be happy, if you're a progressive, that Joe Biden has not given an answer to this question as to whether he would expand the Supreme Court or get rid of the filibuster. Because by not answering that question, that probably means he's open to doing it. If Joe Biden were totally against it, he would come out and say it full-fledged. He would say, no, I'm not for getting rid of the filibuster, and I'm not for expanding the Supreme Court. He most certainly would not come out and say he's in favor of either of those things, but I think a no answer on those two questions, or I mean an not giving any answer whatsoever means he's probably open to expanding the Supreme Court and getting rid of the filibuster. So a little bit of a different take on that. But I think by Joe Biden not answering those questions probably means he is open to getting rid of the filibuster and expanding the Supreme Court. Let's get to some local news today in the state legislature. Uh-oh, somebody might be nervous in the Republican Party of Minnesota. That would be Minority Leader Kurt Dowd, as he has done a reversal and now says and has notified DFL leaders that he is open to passing a bonding bill that would not be tied towards getting rid of Governor Tim Walz's executive authority. Again, for months and months, Kurt Dowd, who is the Republican leader in the Minnesota House, has said, "We are not passing a bonding bill until Governor Tim Walz gets rid of his emergency powers." And he has to do that because, remember, to pass a bonding bill, you need a supermajority, which means in the House, you would need some Republicans to come on board. But this is an interesting reversal by Kurt Dowd saying that, well, we're okay passing a bonding bill, and get this timing, in October, and will no longer tie it to the use of Governor Walz's emergency powers. Probably means someone's feeling a little nervous about this fall's legislative elections. I'm a little surprised by this, though, because Patrick, chime in on this, too. It's kind of depressing to put it this way, but ultimately, unless you're someone who really follows politics closely like you or I don't know if anyone really cares that much about the bonding bill, but maybe Kurt Dowd is seeing something there indicating that they could lose more seats if they don't come on board with the bonding bill. But ultimately, I'm surprised because Republicans have really staked out this position that there's going to be no bonding bill unless Governor Walz gets rid of his emergency powers.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, maybe he does see something that, you know, because remember, the bonding bill goes to a lot of these Republican districts outstate that, you know, this isn't like, oh, we're just funding you guys fixing 494 and the metro and some other freeways. There's a lot of rural projects in this bill, and maybe some of the constituents are saying, hey, stop spiting the cities while you're hurting us.
Very good point. As you said, a lot of this money in the bonding bill does not even go to the metro area. It goes to these very rural red districts where they do things like build new water plants or help with infrastructure projects that are very important to people who live in rural areas. So, yeah, perhaps Dowd is seeing something there as to why he's reversed his position a bit in terms of the bonding bill. But I love that he says in this release that he's open to passing a bonding bill during the October session. Gee, I wonder why he's open to doing that specifically in the October session. Oh yeah, we have an election in November. Donald Trump was in Duluth last night. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about this because I'm guessing Matt will probably get into this on his show, and I am a little short on time. But if you saw WCCO TV last night, they had one of their photographers get punched by a Trump supporter live on the airwaves. Again, going to that argument that we heard during the debate of law and order, and it's mostly people on the left who are being violent. Yeah, just go watch that video of WCCO TV, a photographer being punched on air. Yikes. And a couple more stories to point out before we head to break here. If you're filling out your ballot, especially an absentee ballot, make sure you turn that over and vote in those judicial races, because there is someone who is yet again running for the state Supreme Court that is absolutely nuts, and listeners of AM 950 probably know this name, Michelle McDonald. Yes, she is again running for the state Supreme Court. And she's in the news today because the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility is requesting that state Supreme Court candidate Michelle McDonald be suspended from the practice of law for a minimum of 90 days as a sanction for her misconduct. A little refresher on Michelle McDonald. I don't have a lot of time to get into this, but this woman is absolutely crazy. Here's just a rundown of her brief history. 2013, she was convicted of drunk driving, which I understand people make mistakes, but that's only just the tip of the icebergs in terms of her crazy statements over the years. At the 2014 Republican State Convention, she gave a Bible-waving speech saying that we need to bring religion into the court systems. She was also banned by the Republican Party of Minnesota from appearing at the 2014 State Fair. She defied that order and actually had to be removed from the State Fair by Republican officials. Yeah, that's a funny story. Google that if you want to read about that back in 2014. What else? She's been tied to the Sandra Grazzini Rucki case. Yeah, a little refresher on that. Matt's covered this extensively with Michael Broadcorb on his show. But she said earlier this year that she does not believe Sandra Grazzini Rucki committed a crime when she abducted her children during a custody dispute with her ex-husband. Yeah, basically this woman, Grazzini Rucki, kidnapped her children. And Michelle McDonald was somewhat involved with the legal proceedings in this case. So, yeah, a very, very far-right judicial candidate in Minnesota and someone that even the Republican Party of Minnesota has disowned. She is, again, running for the state Supreme Court. So make sure you turn over your ballot this fall if you plan on voting. And please, don't let Michelle McDonald on the state Supreme Court. All right, we're going to take a break and come on back with Jen McEwen, Senate District 7 up in the Duluth area. That's up next here on FYI Politics. And we're back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. We're joined now by Jen McEwen. She is the DFL candidate in Senate District 7, which includes Duluth and the surrounding areas up in northeastern Minnesota, as we're going to be talking about her campaign as well as Donald Trump's visit to northern Minnesota on Thursday, as, of course, Trump did make yet another visit to Minnesota. And I got to say here, Jen, one of my favorite lines he used was, "If I lose Minnesota, I'm never coming back." So let's hope he stays true to his word. So, Jen, yes. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. So what was your reaction to Donald Trump's appearance in Minnesota?
Well, you know, it was, I guess my reaction was certainly one of anger. I mean, we don't want him in Duluth. Duluth is a solid, progressive community and with very forward-thinking, very well-educated people. And so him coming into our community felt very offensive, particularly after his behavior at the debate the night before, where he really clarified once again for people that he is a white supremacist and he is just so unfit for this role, for any leadership role, frankly, and his bullying. And I mean, we could go on and on about who he is as a person, but to have him come and try to rally people throughout Minnesota to come to our beloved city, to rally around that kind of fear and hate, it's hard. You know, we really don't want to see that type of coming together in our community. We want to see a positive coming together in our community. So we just brace ourselves, and now that he's left, we can kind of breathe a sigh of relief and keep on moving forward. So.
Well, and going into specifics about what he brought up last night, no surprise that we heard lots and lots of lies from Donald Trump. That's certainly nothing new, yeah. But at least specific to northeastern Minnesota is that, well, he included a line saying that he's brought mining jobs back to northern Minnesota. Well, even though that's really not true, as I'm sure you can attest to, Minnesota's been actually losing quite a few mining jobs since he took office.
Yeah, that's absurd. I mean, again, he's just preying on people's fears. He's trying to hit some hot button issues that he knows that people are really deeply invested in up on the range. And he's hoping that that's going to resonate with people, even though he doesn't really have any facts or any real substance behind what he's saying. So we've seen that over and over again with him, as you know, and you just said he just lies constantly. And so, there's nothing new there.
So you, of course, are also a supporter of the Joe Biden-Kamala Harris campaign. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to go for them this fall.
Well, you know, I think, and I make no secret of the fact that I'm more of a Sanders Democrat myself, a Sanders DFLer. But this is a moment in our democracy when we really need all hands on deck here. In my mind, as we went through the primary and we saw how things were coming together, there really wasn't any question about what I would be doing. I was going to be acting in solidarity with people of good conscience throughout the nation, across the political spectrum, really, and really see this election as a struggle between democracy and authoritarianism. It's a real stark choice. And so, for me, I mean, I know that with a Biden presidency, I'm not going to get everything that I personally want to see in a real progressive politics like Bernie Sanders is working for toward, and other people in the Democratic Party are working forward toward. But I do know that Joe Biden is a good person, and I know that he is going to be acting from a good place, and I know that he's going to be civil, and he's going to be good to work with. And I do believe that getting back to that place and bringing people back together around our common values across the political spectrum is really what we need right now, to just to move away from that hatred and that white supremacy and the fear and the authoritarianism. We have to get back to our core values.
Well, I think a lot of people are in the same boat as you were during the primary season. Yeah. They probably supported someone other than Joe Biden, but now coming this fall, they realize that, well, we need to get Donald Trump out of office. So I think, a lot of people are definitely expressing some of the same feelings you have. At least up in your neck of the woods, which again includes Duluth and some of the surrounding areas, as you've had a chance to chat with some of your potential constituents, what are their overall thoughts on the presidential election, since we often hear about how strong Donald Trump is in northeastern Minnesota?
Yeah, you know, it is interesting from where I'm sitting in Duluth. Like I said, when we started this conversation, Donald Trump did terrible. I just went back, actually, and looked at the 2016 election numbers to make sure that I really was correct about what I've been saying. But the last election, he lost at Duluth handily. I mean, maybe right around 30% of the vote. So 70%, you know, was of the voters in Duluth did not vote for Donald Trump. And so I think that that's significant. So in my Senate district, you know, we're always a little bit confounded here in Duluth because we're part of the 8th, and we do know that, you know, there has been a lot of talk about the more rural areas of the 8th going more red. And that's really, really unfortunate, and there's a lot of baggage to unpack there about why that might be happening. But Duluth has really held strong. And I know that the election of Donald Trump came as a true shock to Duluthians. And so coming around now to this election, the energy in town and the resolve amongst the electorate to turn out in really high numbers for Biden, I mean, it's really strong. I have a really good feeling about what our voter turnout is going to be here in Duluth. And usually our voter turnout in Duluth is some of the highest in the nation. So we're really proud of that. But I think we're even going to bust our own records because people are just so appalled at what they've seen these last years from Donald Trump.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to get at, because as you said, your Senate District 7, which includes Duluth and the surrounding areas, which is, certainly one of the more blue areas in northern Minnesota, if we're using the blue-red trope that is often used in different media outlets. But yeah, it definitely is going to be about turnout in that area, and any sort of good turnout that you get in Senate District 7 will have coattail effects, certainly to the congressional race and also the presidential race, which is very important to get to Democratic as well.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it has been interesting. Some of the classic fear tropes that the Republican Party under Donald Trump have been using, this really fear-based message, really authoritarian-minded message, labeling their opponents as extremists and socialists, and all of the buzzwords to try to make people scared. You know, in Duluth, we've sort of laughed at that because we feel like, I don't know if they know this electorate very well. They're sending these mailers trying to stir up fear that actually, I think, resonate with a lot of people in Duluth to say, well, actually, that would be okay. We'd be kind of happy if the DFL and the Democratic Party go in a progressive direction. So.
And that was part one of my conversation with Jen McEwen running for Senate District 7, which includes Duluth and some of the surrounding areas. And remember, this was a very contentious primary during the primary season as McEwen knocked off a longtime DFLer. We are going to be talking more specifically about some local issues in Duluth and her district coming up next here on FYI Politics. And we're back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Let's get back to the interview with Jen McEwen running for State Senate in District 7. That includes Duluth and some of the surrounding areas. And we're going to be talking more specifically about DFL politics in northeastern Minnesota, since that's certainly been very contentious for the past few years with labor interests versus environmental interests. But are those mutually exclusive? We'll get into that more with Jen McEwen right now.
Let's talk a little more specifically about your race because, well, you kind of came to prominence by knocking off a DFL incumbent in Eric Simonson in a very contentious primary. So my question to you, Jen, is what sparked you to run for that Senate seat and why do you think you could bring a different perspective to St. Paul should you be elected?
Well, what sparked me to run was that I and other Duluthians had been following our incumbent senators' votes, in particular in regard to some of these natural resource issues, some of these big extractive industry projects, fossil fuel-based projects that are happening here in northeastern Minnesota. And we were seeing him voting with Republicans in committee, often trying to water down good environmental legislation, voting against his DFL colleagues to try to make progress on the climate crisis, all of these things that didn't really conform to where our politics is here in Duluth and the kind of, I've talked and waxed on here about how progressive Duluthians are, and that's true. So I think there was a disjoint between what the constituency here in Duluth is asking for and demanding going forward and where our own DFL senator was, on in particular in regard to those issues. So there was a lot of push amongst some people in Duluth for someone to step up and make a challenge. And with the pandemic and all of these really core vital issues coming to bear, the healthcare crisis that we were already in before the pandemic hit, housing is a crisis issue throughout our state and here in Duluth as well. Wealth inequality going to these absurd levels that have only been exacerbated by the pandemic, and the uprisings that we've seen due to decades and decades of inequalities, systemic, institutionalized racial inequalities. So everything coming to bear, just it felt like this is the moment where we're at a real juncture of some important decision making. And it was important to me to have leadership representing my own community that I grew up in, that I love, and that I feel that I am connected with on a real deep level, that we have representation that represents our values in regard to those core issues. So I stepped in to try to do that, and I want to be a part of that decision making going forward, and it resonated, and we won the primary with over 70% of the vote. So I think I'm really excited to work on these issues. In a time of crisis like we're in right now, there's also tremendous opportunity, and particularly if we can have a new administration federally that will be working with people cooperatively together, we could really, as the Biden campaign says, build back better. We really can. We're going to need to build back in a variety of ways, and it's really exciting to think about all the different legislators who are coming up right now. I'm just one of many really wonderful candidates. And it's really exciting to think about the things that we may be able to accomplish in regard to healthcare, in regard to the climate crisis, in regard to strengthening worker protections, just really working on those core bread and butter issues.
Well, one of the issues you brought up just a few moments ago was homelessness, which has unfortunately been a big problem for the Duluth area. And it is an issue that kind of flies under the radar that I think oftentimes people don't pay a lot of attention to. But unfortunately, as I said, it has been an issue for your area. So if you end up going to St. Paul, what sorts of legislation would you like to see to hopefully get people back into homes?
Oh, I'm in favor of a real all of the above strategy and really large scale investments in affordable housing. This is where, you know, we can come together through our government and through our represented elected officials and our institutions to provide housing for one another and take a real housing first approach when it comes to meeting the needs for people in our communities. You know, like countries around the world and communities around the world who have taken a housing first approach have found that it's, you know, it's not only more humane, right? I mean, because it's the right thing to do. It just is. And then, but it also allows people to be able to address other issues that they may need other help with. Like if their homelessness is in part going hand in hand with some mental health issues that they're dealing with or some chemical dependency issues, or if they just need help economically in other ways, not having housing just compounds all of that. So getting people housed first and then helping people with other issues that they need help with is really the way to go. And, you know, from the economic, more conservative, fiscally conservative perspective, it also saves money. And budgetary, it's the smart thing to do in regard to our budget. So, I plan on taking a very proactive approach in as much as we can. And I know that there are other legislators coming up as well who are passionate about this and who are committed to solving this crisis.
And unfortunately, I think affordable housing really could be the issue of the upcoming decade because, well, even before COVID-19, housing was very unaffordable for a lot of people. And of course, that's only been exacerbated by COVID. And I just kind of look at a potential fiscal cliff that could be on the way in 2021 once that moratorium on evictions and defaulting on mortgages goes away. I could see a lot of people in economic pain and potentially losing their homes. So I think that's it's a big deal, unfortunately, that could really be coming our way in 2021 or beyond.
Yeah, it could become and I think, you know, we keep talking about throughout this campaign as well, just the interconnectedness of all of these issues. So when we're talking about the looming crisis that you were just mentioning with these moratoriums on evictions and mortgage foreclosures and whatnot falling away, we need to think about how we're going to address our economic recession overall. And that in turn is tied into how are we going to transition to a clean energy economy. All those things can be worked on if we make the investments that we need to make and really lean into our economy like we know that we have to do. It's, you know, we can't cut our way out of a recession. We know from our history and from, you know, basic economics 101 that when you're facing a recession, that is not the time to take an austerity posture where you're cutting things and you're tightening belts all over the place. You really need to strategically look at where in your economy can you make these big investments to put people to work, to get people participating in the economy, and really to get things moving again. And we can do that in a way that creates a clean energy economy. You know, it really is this unique moment in our country where in the midst of all of this crisis, we will have an amazing opportunity in these coming years to transition into something much better.
And even diving deeper on the issue, of course, the environment has certainly been a very contentious issue in northeastern Minnesota. And the trope has always been that, especially in your area, that for Democrats is always a choice between fighting for labor and fighting for environmental protections. But I never liked that idea that those two things have to be mutually exclusive. What are your thoughts on that? Because that's always been the trope or the divide about the DFL in northern Minnesota, is that it's environmental issues versus labor interests.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this question, because I do think that my win in the primary by such a large margin was in large part many Duluthians saying, we are not going to buy into this trope any longer. You know, this whole false dichotomy and division between environmentalists and labor. I mean, I can tell you that Duluthians are both very strong organized labor supporters. We're members of unions. Our families are in unions. Our benefits are, you know, standard of living is based on our strong labor history here in Duluth and in northeastern Minnesota. But we also are fierce protectors of our Lake Superior here in Duluth, and the natural waterways and beauty up here in northeastern Minnesota. So we're all the same people, actually. And it really has been a sort of divide and conquer strategy that has in large part come from these international, you know, mining conglomerates like the Glencores and the Antofagastas, who are have this divide and conquer strategy in northeastern Minnesota to try to pit neighbors against each other. But really, we can move forward from that, from this period that we've been in of this false split that's been made. And, you know, now is the time to do that. It really is. I think that there's a lot of room for everyone to come together and to build better into the future for a clean energy economy.
All right, Jen, final question for you. And I was looking at your background on your website before you decided to run, of course, for the state legislature. You were an attorney representing workers with disability claims against insurance companies, which I find interesting since I'm part of that community. I have many friends that are as well. So got to ask, what sorts of cases did you see when you were doing that sort of work? Or are you actually still doing that sort of work too right now?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Yeah, I still do that kind of work. I do the firm where I work, we do workers' compensation. So oftentimes in workers' compensation cases, a worker who has become disabled will have their medical bills covered, for example, in regard to a work injury. And at some point, the insurance company will, for any number of reasons, find a reason and say, oh, we're not going to pay anymore. We're not going to cover these injuries anymore. And then we'll have clients coming to us where, you know, they need a surgery, or they've had been cut off in terms of their medications, or they're not allowed to get therapy any longer that they really need. And they're understandably in a crisis situation where they really need someone to go to bat for them with this insurance company and to fight for them to receive the benefits that insurance company had agreed to provide to them. So, we see all sorts of cases, and oftentimes, it just exposes the brokenness of, in particular, of our healthcare system, because, you know, to have all of these various insurance schemes set up for people to receive healthcare that really we should be providing healthcare to people as a right by virtue of their just living here, by being citizens, that they should get their healthcare as a right. And we shouldn't have it tied into employment. And people shouldn't have to deal with insurance companies and deductibles and all of this paperwork and trying to convince a bunch of profit-making insurance executives that they deserve healthcare. It's a right. It's a human right. And so my work in that area has really strengthened my resolve around support for the Minnesota Health Plan and also for a single-payer health plan federally as soon as we can get there.
It's Jen McEwen. She is running in Senate District 7. That's Duluth and some of the surrounding areas. Jen, where can people learn more about your campaign and get involved?
Well, we have a website. It is votemcewen.com. There's a place on the website where you can send us a message, and you can sign up to volunteer. You can ask for a lawn sign. You can send us a message if you want to talk about an issue or have a question for us. And similarly, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we have an Instagram account, so we're on social media and we're really out there. So we'd love to hear from anybody who wants to connect. And we're really looking forward to helping elect the Biden-Harris ticket in November. And not just elect them, but elect them with really, really great numbers. So that there's no disputes and no trouble and we can move forward together.
And as you said, yeah, hopefully get more progressive DFLers elected down ticket as well. Again, Jen McEwen, yeah. Senate District 7, really appreciate the time today. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
And before I go, still a few more days left to purchase your tickets to our vice presidential debate watching party. That is on Wednesday at Crooner's Supper Club. It'll be Kamala Harris hopefully knocking off Mike Pence during that debate. Looking forward to that one. Probably will be a lot more civil than the presidential debate we had earlier this week. But you can purchase your tickets for our vice presidential debate watch party, am950radio.com. They're $25, but you do need to order those ahead of time. No tickets will be available at the door, as we have to practice social distancing and have a very limited capacity. Also, very good news about that debate on Wednesday is that looks like we should be getting some good weather here in Minnesota, which is key since that debate watch party is going to be at an outdoor venue at Crooner's Supper Club. So look forward to seeing you at our vice presidential debate watch party. That is next Wednesday, Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65. Get your tickets now at am950radio.com. All right, we got Matt McNeil coming up next.